This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Thursday, 11th of August, 2022. Markets really enthused about a soft July CPI print. Of course, we were emphasizing for the cycle, at least, if not for any single monthly print, that we still think the risks of inflation are a very real and present danger. The Fed seems to think so as well, at least in terms of warning the market, many Fed members, that the forecast for rate cuts next year seems ill-advised. Kash Khare, the president of the Minneapolis Fed, out yesterday saying that he doesn't see any reason to lower his forecasts, which are actually even higher than the Fed's own median forecast, and of course higher than the market, predicting 3.9% this year and 4.4%, I believe it was, for next year. So I think the interesting tension, I would say, here in the reaction function was the fact that risk sentiment really gunned higher. We saw the dollar also on its knees. That's a pretty obvious reaction to a soft print. But if you look at the Treasury yield reaction to this, we saw it very much unchanged by the end of the day. There was a brief rally in Treasuries, yields dropping, but that was eliminated. And to my mind, the Treasury market is supposed to be the lead indicator here, the coincident indicator that's really important. But the market's completely brushing this off. So I find that an interesting tension here, Peter. I don't know if you agree, but certainly the speculative juices were flowing in abundance yesterday.
Yeah, you can say that. We had NextGen Medicine basket up 14%. So I guess Kathy Wood and ARK Invest is pretty happy about that. And bubble stocks were flying, crypto, 3D printing, some of the most downbeat parts of the equity market. Not a big surprise. All the high duration assets were really bid yesterday. And I think the NASDAQ 100 almost managed to do a 3% climb. And we're getting very close to some key resistance levels for quite a while back. And we can take those out and we can continue with the positive momentum. Why not go to 14,000? I wouldn't exclude any move at this point in time. I've been quite surprised recently about the market behavior. And I will point out, John, I've mentioned this on the podcast, but also on Twitter, this 6 month average, because that was what Mester she referred to in her recent comment as also that the macro health on Twitter also writing about this yesterday. And if you look at the slide four, I've put in the core CPI months and months and the 6 month average, and you can see the drop down to around 0.3% months and months is equivalent to what we had back in March, and then we snap back in the subsequent months. So it's only one data point. If you even if we get 0 month to month inflation for the rest of the year, we'll still end up with inflation for this year of 6.5%. I don't think based on the 6 month average, which is what Mester she sort of alluded to, you won't have any clarity or confidence on inflation until you get late into the first quarter of 2023. That's just simply the math of it with the rolling average. So I think that is also what Kaskari is saying. I mean, it's just a rate cut is totally off the table for the first quarter. Maybe in the second quarter, given whatever assumptions you might have on the economy. But then I think we need to talk a little bit more broader about the real structural change. I don't, for the listeners of this podcast, will know that we are definitely not leaning in the camp that that inflation will just go back to 2% and then we'll all be happy and we'll go back to the same trades. It's a very different world. And you mentioned before we went on the podcast, John, the whole geopolitical narrative and the structural issues we have on the supply side of economies, all these things are not solved. And we also have big issues in food and energy in general.
Yeah, great points. And just to emphasize, you mentioned 14,000. That is an important level on the NASDAQ 100. We don't show that chart today, but have a look at it. So the 200-day moving average coming in slightly above there, and that was a very key technical resistance area on a prior rally. And then the S&P 500, we're actually getting within striking distance soon of its own 200-day moving average. That one is on slide two, currently coming in just above 4,300 by the time we get near there, maybe towards 4,300. So yes, very interesting that we're continuing to rally again without necessarily the green light from longer yields, which I show on the following slide, slide three, the 10-year yield on the right there. So no reaction by the end of the day in terms of the closing level. But then again, you could say it's not really pushing that strongly at all against the market unless we're heading back towards 3% for the long-term yields there. Just to indicate and put up the table from the BLS CPI survey and I did some cutting and slicing so I could get some of the table into the slide there on slide three, and pointing out what the major contributors were to this print coming in where it did. The food items, still very strong inflation there. Food and food at home up 1.1 and 1.3% month on month, respectively. Food inflation at 11 plus percent or 10.9 for the broad category, 13% for food at home. That's a hefty increase. Energy, you can see the year on year at 33% almost, but that month on month of minus 4.6 was really what helps take the whole headline inflation level down month on month to 0.0% for the month. And then shelter. So further down there, it's a 32% weight. It is the biggest category in the CPI. It looks a little bit low to me at a 5.7% increase year on year. New contracts apparently going out, rental contracts, et cetera. It's 12 to 15% increases. So there's still some risk of that being a lagging indicator relative to home prices, that continues to drive some inflationary levels going for the next at least several months. And then the airline fare is helping to drag the core lower with that massive 7.8% drop month on month. And then we have your core CPI slide, slide four we discussed already. And then I think the interesting thing here being, and I'll get to you on the forward risk for some of these inflationary drivers, but just the general backdrop of the market conditions and financial conditions really easing and easing very aggressively. So something that's a little bit slower to turn around, the one we've mentioned before, the Chicago Fed Financial Conditions Index, you can see that on slide five. It has rolled over. It is a weekly index that's posted there. And in many cases, when it rolls over for quite a long time. But you can see back in the 2014 to 16 time period, there were several sort of false starts, false rollovers. So there's nothing necessarily inevitable about that. But our global risk indicator, which takes into account actual financial conditions like yield spreads, whether it's EM, whether it's corporate, and then importantly, some market volatility indicators, hitting the positive level for the first time since a very, very brief episode late last year. So I think that's pretty remarkable. And if the Fed really wants to do something about this situation, it's going to need to push back and push back a bit more determinedly than having random Fed members sort of pushing back with rhetoric and interviews, et cetera. And the next best chance for it to do so would be the Jackson Hole Symposium or forum that comes up here at the end of this month. We'll be really looking on the lookout for a Fed that is determined to send a message to the market. If it doesn't, of course, then and conditions continue to get easier, I think we're set up for an even more dangerous confrontation further out in the future. But I think that is definitely the next step from the Fed here. And then Ola, over to you on, we've talked about some of the longer term risks for both natural gas, crude oil. Is there anything shaping up in the market here? Are we basing, do you think, in terms of oil, especially here?
Well, our view, which we held all week, is still playing out here, that we are at or near a low in the oil price. We saw a bounce yesterday. The general level of risk appetite across the market following the CPI print obviously did some work into the commodity space as well, primarily the weak dollar, I would say. But then also we had the EIA weekly update, and that was really what I think carried the market higher towards the end of the day. And the number that the market was focused on there was the gasoline market. We saw almost a 5 million barrel drop in gasoline inventories. We got very, very strong exports right now. It's the highest level, I believe, since 2015. And we also saw a reversal of some of this recent weakness that has been kind of shown in the gasoline demand. The EIA was actually out with a statement yesterday, just highlighting how they try to how they collect these data and what they reflect, and basically saying that between the lines that yes. There can be a discrepancy between what is actually reported in terms of sales at the pumps and the numbers that they are putting out. But we saw a pickup there in their numbers. So generally a robust report. Crude oil inventories rose, but we have to remember that's primarily due to SPR, strategic reserve, still being pumped into the market. That will not carry on forever. That will eventually ease. We're not many weeks away from that. And then we will see what the situation is in the oil market at that point. So generally, with what's happening in the world with the embargo on the Russian crude later this year, OPEC plus running at pretty close to max capacity. Any signs of a easing recession fears is likely to underpin the prices here.
Yeah, and then I'm really curious on the natural gas side here in the coming weeks, because we had that shutdown of that Freeport natural gas facility and an export facility in the U.S. that was meant to mean that LNG supplies, or not LNG, but natural gas supplies in the U.S. domestically would build aggressively or more aggressively and maybe catch up to where they should be for the season, because that gas was not being exported to Europe and elsewhere. But we haven't really seen any robust build, or at least we're still under the five-year average in the U.S. And I'm curious, really curious, what happens once that facility comes back online, supposedly now in October, when you have this amazing demand out of Europe for prices at multiples of what it's selling for in the U.S. still.
Absolutely, and we got the weekly data coming out today, so we'll pop in a few charts tomorrow. But you're absolutely right. The Freeport LNG export plant is around 20% of Russian U.S. export. So obviously that gas would have stayed domestically, and has been consumed, because consumption, and again I'll show that on a chart tomorrow. Consumption has been fairly robust. It's been a very warm summer in the U.S., so the electricity demand has been elevated. And just reversing to your views of the breakdown of the CPI number, the energy component, there is a risk that we will continue to see high prices for gas in the U.S. into the winter. And gas has become such a big part of the energy mix, because gas has been dead cheap for more than a decade, or for a decade almost.
Yeah. So build the supply and the demand will come, and then the demand came in the form of lots of electricity production facilities or electrical power plants and run by gas in the U.S.
Exactly. So the gas situation in Europe or in U.S. is challenged as well. As you said, John, inventory levels are trailing the five-year average, and actually has been diverging recently. So we'll take a closer look at that.
I'm going to rewind a bit and look at just the Forex reaction to the CPI report before I segue into your comments on gold, because we saw again the dollar reaction was quite swift, quite strong, and it stuck fairly well. And it's quite interesting to see something like dollar yen sticking considerably lower here, despite there's a lack of volatility in the longer end of the U.S. yield curve. Normally, a very, very close relationship with U.S. yield serving as a key coinciding indicator. We could have a new theme developing here. The idea being perhaps as long as that longer end in the U.S. is sort of sluggish and not going anywhere, then it can allow the market to sort of indulge in its eventual rollover of Fed policy, relatively low real rates in the U.S. and maybe just a repricing of the dollar, because the Fed is seen as peaking out and cycling lower eventually. Maybe we could get a repricing across the board. It's a fair comment, but I think only one that's possible if we just continue to see very strong animal spirits and we continue to get data that is benign and a Fed that does not want to push back against the market view. So there's a path there for further dollar weakness for sure. Let's see how this move sticks beyond a day or two, and especially if U.S. Treasury volatility picks up and moves back counter to that this month. So that would be my key comment on the U.S. dollar. But I think gold, interestingly, seeming to take its cue a bit more or a bit less from the dollar and a bit more from rates yesterday. Oil in this really touchy 1780 to 1800 range here. It was kind of it was very disappointing for any gold bull to see yesterday's price action.
Yeah, on a day where the dollar weakens broadly by more than 1%, and we end up trading lower on the day in gold, that's obviously not a good day. So the input to gold yesterday basically came from that surge in Peter's space, the equity market, that risk on coming into the equity market, and the prospect or the market basically assuming that we're going to see a lower peak in interest rates, and we may see a cut sooner than previously expected. These all just took some of the wind out of gold sales. So we're consolidating right now. But as we highlighted earlier in the week, the industrial metals and semi-industrial metals are potentially the space to watch right now. Copper and silver has been trading quite much in tandem for quite a while. They both suffered a very, very sharp sell-off between June and July, and they have both equally started to recover quite strongly. Watching copper on the slide, on slide 7 here, we have reached the first level of key interest, that 38.2% retracement at 368. We're actually trading above as we record this. Had after a small shallow correction overnight, so copper seems to be finding its footing here, and that obviously is the opposite situation of gold. That potential lower recession, lower inflation, will also increase demand for copper, because obviously a lot of projects are being challenged because inflation is just simply so high. But if they start to come down, then that could lift the growth outlook. So that's what the COP is responding to right now.
Okay, and then running back over to the equity market, Peter, I don't know if that, of course, the Disney had a very positive report after the close yesterday. I don't know how much a company like Disney can lift broader sentiment. But what is your focus here, including Disney, in today's market?
Well, it is one of the biggest companies in the U.S. equity market. So the result yesterday, that was better than expected on the top line. Also on the bottom line, they posted subscriber figures for Disney Plus that was a couple of millions above estimates. And if you combine the Hulu, ESPN, and the Disney Plus universe, then the combined online or video streaming subscriber base is now bigger than Netflix. So hats off to Disney for that. Profits are generally just coming back faster, and it's coming in the past quarter from their parks and experiences segment. And they also saying that they're going to raise their Disney Plus ad-free streaming price by 38%. So hopefully that is not the inflation rate we're going to experience over the next year. But it's definitely the Disney inflation rate that we're going to pay. Very solid report there. And then Qbang, which is a South Korean e-commerce company being, you know, touted as sort of the Amazon of that region. They lifted their fiscal year EBITDA outlook from previously 400 million loss to a positive. So they're really doing everything they can on the cost side to cut back and get profitable. And here in Europe this morning, Siemens is cutting its profit guidance for this year. There's a lot of impairments in the energy division. It was the same story the previous quarter, but they are updating doing more impairments. The positive thing for Siemens is the order intake is extremely strong. I think it was 3 billion euros better than expected. I think that was more than a 10% beat on the orders intake. And then Ørsted, the biggest utility company on the renewable side here in Europe, is lifting its guidance for operating profit, but the range is still very, very well below than our market expectation, and so the share price there is trading lower.
And I'm not seeing any names that are super compelling for me on the earnings list for today, but I guess this NIO, which was one of those big high flyers during the pandemic. Is there anything that's going to light a fire there? It looks like it's been established into a broader range there.
Yeah, I mean, since we got the lows in the second quarter, the EV makers, Tesla and all the Chinese ones have gained considerably from those lows. And the big takeaway today to watch from NIO, there was also Rivian Automotive, which will have its first, I call it, real quarter, where they actually expected to generate more than $300 million in revenue. It's partly owned by Amazon and is doing electrical delivery vans and trucks. But NIO is the big focus because they're a big one in China and a little bit higher up end in the market in terms of price. They're expected to only deliver 15% revenue growth. So it's all about the outlook because there's a lot of hangovers from the COVID restrictions and the Chinese car association that put out these numbers, 6 million expected EV sales this year, indicate that NIO should post a pretty robust outlook. And the market is looking for an outlook that suggests a 70% growth rate year on year in Q3. So that's the focus today. But otherwise, I agree with you. The earnings calendar is running out of fuel here.
All right. So is the macro calendar a little bit today. The July PPI, it is an interesting data point, but it doesn't get the type of market reaction that we generally see in the CPI. That one's up today. The latest weekly initial claims could be an interesting one if it surprises in either direction. I think how it fits with the market's rather aggressive narrative here on what it thinks is going to happen. Another Treasury auction that was a very orderly and fine 10-year Treasury auction yesterday. A very solid demand actually at that auction. And then we have a couple of, we have that weekly natural gas storage report. Those get sort of increasingly interesting as we're heading into the winter in the U.S., and then a OPEC monthly oil market report. Is there going to be fireworks around that and the IEA's monthly oil?
Yeah, exactly. We've got the two major forecasters both coming out today. So the IEA has come out by the time this podcast is out. So I'll tweet any major findings. But obviously, the market will want to keep a close eye on their forecast for both supply and demand into 2023.
Yeah. And then we have the latest Michigan sentiment survey, given the obsessive focus on inflation expectations and the fact that gasoline price has dropped so much in the U.S. I doubt we're going to see fireworks to the upside on inflation expectations, but we'll have to watch that for any potential bounce in sentiment also, because we saw some record lows in that 40 plus year history of that survey in recent months. So we'll be on the lookout for that. And again, I think I really need to put a pin in your calendar on that Fed Jackson Hole, Wyoming symposium or forum coming up here towards the end of the month. Let's see if this move off the back of yesterday's CPI release sticks, and we'll see where things stand tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter @SaxoMarketCall or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.